Hey friends, I hope you're all staying as safe and healthy and comfortable as possible, and that you're taking care of all the people and pets and plants that are important to you. This past week, I finished the fourth complete edit of a manuscript I intend to publish as a novel in late summer or early fall of this year. The title of this tale is 0% Juice, and it's about a guy with absolutely no charm or charisma, but who is otherwise a good person, who finds out there's a guy who looks exactly like him living in his city, who has loads of charm and charisma, but who is an absolute scoundrel. I'm very happy with the story. I'm editing it every day. I can't wait to share it with the world later this year. This will be my 12th published novel. All 11 of my previously published books are currently available worldwide in both ebook and paperback formats via Amazon. If you don't use Amazon, you can find and buy all of my titles in ebook format at Google Play. Just search my last name, which is spelled M-A-S-C-O-L-A. That's how you'll find me on Google Play. There are no ads on this podcast, and there is no Patreon set up for it. If you'd like to help support myself and this show monetarily, and get yourself or the reader in your life some excellent fiction, the best way to do that is to purchase any or all of my books. If you've already bought any or all of my stories, thank you, thank you, thank you. I sincerely appreciate your generous patronage. And with all that out of the way, here's the quirky theme song. People Are the Enemy listeners. This is episode 322 of the People Are the Enemy podcast. Thank you so much for checking it out. It's good to have you along. You are now rocking with the best. Where else would you be? We're having fun.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
I'm Archie Bell of the Thrills.
Hello, Archie Bell.
From Houston, Texas. We don't only sing, but we dance just as good as we want.
Okay.
In Houston, we just started a new dance called the Tighten Up.
The Tighten Up? Okay. Can you teach me how to do it?
First, tighten up on the drum.
Okay, let's hear that.
Come on now, drummer.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to tighten it up for me now.
Ooh, I like it.
Oh, yeah. Tighten up on that bass now.
Okay, let's hear him tighten up on the bass.
Tighten it up.
Oh, my God, yeah. That's funky.
Now let that guitar fall in.
Guitar?
Oh, yeah.
I love it. Are you digging it?
Now.
Oh, organ. There it is. Okay.
Yeah, now. I said if you can do it now, you sure will be tough. Now look here.
Okay.
Come on now. Now make it mellow.
Thank you, Archie Bell and the Drills. Beautiful. Very nice. From 1968, that was the Tighten Up. Or just Tighten Up, if you prefer, by Archie Bell and the Drells. Good stuff there. Hope you're doing well out there. Hope everything's going okay in your world. It's good to have you along. I just ate, probably an eighth of a jar of peanut butter right out of the jar with a spoon. And what I did was I took chocolate sauce and I basically just squeezed it all over that peanut butter, right? That was my snack. Speaking of snack, I got a little snack song to play for you. I figured I'd get this in here. This is one I found on TikTok. Check this out. Let's hear the snack song.
Somebody ate up all the doggone food in the house. Who did it?
I did it.
Come on. These accusations.
No, I fully admit to it.
Somebody ate up all the doggone food in the house. You did it.
Yes, I did.
Come on. These accusations. We're resting in chips.
Yeah. If you're looking for that one, that's by a guy who calls himself Dr. Fubs, F-U-B-B-S, on TikTok. I thought that was cute. I was like, I gotta somehow fit this in, but Yeah, I figured I'd do it early in the show. Early in the show. But, yeah, I love peanut butter, man. I bought that jar of peanut butter, I think, yesterday. I bought a jar of, like, of Skippy peanut butter, just regular creamy Skippy, and a small jar of Market Basket, which is our local supermarket brand, grape jelly. And I would take a spoonful of the peanut butter and a spoonful of the grape jelly, and I'd eat that as a snack. And I did that throughout the day. And then I continued doing it today. And wouldn't you know it, I had like a little bit left, and I said, you know what, I'm going to save this little bit. And I'm going to eat this just before I record the podcast, so I have a little bit of sugar, a little bit of energy going to give the people a little something-something. So I hope you're doing well. I hope you're, I hope you have a nice snack. Did you have a nice snack today? Was it something more healthy than peanut butter and chocolate? Maybe carrots? I do carrots and hummus. My doctor prefers I do carrots and hummus, but come on. I rarely get peanut butter. What was crazy was my wife gave me a shopping list today. She said, can you pick these things up for me today while I'm at work? And one of the things on her list was Skippy peanut butter. And I said, I've got a jar. I've got about, and she said, oh yeah, how much is left? And I said, about half. She said, oh yeah. And I said, yeah, and I've been eating it out of the jar. She said, okay, you need to get a brand new jar of Skippy peanut butter. This is for a recipe. I'm not using the jar of Skippy peanut butter you've been eating out of. I said, okay, I understand. I immediately put my name on it to differentiate. But yeah, that's my snack sometimes. Jar of peanut butter. I like that. And there's worse things, right? Come on, man. You gotta have your vices. I like, what? Ice cream is my heroin. If there's ice cream in the freezer, it's gone, man. We can't keep it in the house. You know what I mean? Because, I will eat it. I love that stuff. I'll do it for dinner. Ice cream for dinner, popcorn for dinner, I'll do that. Yeah. Oh, you know what else happened this week? I should tell you some things here. I should tell you some stories. I'm sitting here shooting my mouth off about snacks. But speaking of shooting, I've been shooting my shot with guests. I should tell you that. I am trying to get people for the show. I've reached out to folks, and so far, no dice. And I am trying, though. I am trying. So believe me, I'm trying to get some fun people to have on the show to speak with. About cool things, people that you like and that you know and that you look forward to hearing from. But it's been difficult. It has been difficult, but I am trying. Believe me. Yeah. Oh, you know what we did this past week? My wife and I went through our closets and we got rid of a ton of old clothes. And I love doing this. And she had some extra time. And she said, I'm going to go through all the closets today. Or rather, all the clothes in our closets today. And I said, okay. And I said, I'll join you. We'll do it together. And we ended up all together getting probably about like 8 garbage bags full of like clothes that no longer fit us or that we just, you know, just didn't want anymore. And I said, let me take these. I'll put these in my car because I've got a hatchback and I'll take these down to the shed. There's like the shed in a church parking lot where you can basically put all these clothes that you want to give to folks who need, you know, clothes. And she said, that'd be great. So I put all these bags in there, and I was happy to do it because I love getting rid of stuff. And when I got down to this shed, outside of the shed, this was so creepy, and this is where my mind goes, but it looked like a giant hockey bag, and not like a duffel bag. This looked like something that, like, a hockey player would carry, maybe for gear. And it was sort of almost like, I'm looking at like a suitcase. I suppose it's like a giant suitcase, you know, except it was wider than a suitcase, you know, like a suitcase on wheels, if you can picture that, and a little stouter. But it looked like the kind of thing that would, like, somebody would put a body in. Yeah, I was like, that is the creepiest looking bag, like, to just be sitting out here outside of this shed. Like, what's in that bag? I was like, I am not going near it. And I was the only one in this parking lot, and it was getting toward dark, and I was just like, I'm getting rid of these bags, and I'm getting the hell out of here. Yeah, probably nothing, probably hockey gear they were probably trying to get rid of. Or maybe just clothes, or maybe it was just the empty case, but yeah, it was like literally like the size of a person. Like, I was like, oh man, you could stuff a body in there. This is where my mind goes, folks. This is why I write fiction. You know what else we did? We were driving downtown, my wife and I, and we passed this old cemetery. I said graveyard once to my mother, and she got upset. Don't call it a graveyard. I was like, really? You can't call it a graveyard? It's a cemetery. Oh, all right, fine. Okay. But I remembered, like, passing this cemetery, Mom, when I was a younger man, and there used to be this mentally disabled man that would stand outside of this cemetery, and he must have been like waiting. I guess it was probably a bus stop at this and it was right at a set of lights, and he used to love to do this. I used to see him doing this every time after it snowed, because snow would get plowed up onto the sidewalk, and this full-grown man, mentally disabled, he would love to like kick the snow, like giant chunks of the snow. Like break them off with his boots and then punt them out into the street so cars would run over them. And I'm sure it's super satisfying, you know, that smash, you know, when a car runs over like a huge chunk of snow. And I'm sure it was irritating people, but like nobody did anything or stopped or said, hey, please don't kick snow out into the street. Because, you know, it's, I think probably because the man obviously had a disability, and you're just kind of like, all right, well, I guess this is his fun. And it was kind of hilarious to watch him do this. And I'm sure he enjoyed it. I don't know if he knew I enjoyed it as much as he did. What I've been enjoying lately, and this is my fun, when I'm out walking the dog, there are dried pine cones in the street all over the place. And stepping on these dried pine cones is so satisfying. It makes this weirdly satisfying crunch. I love it. It's so like, you know, with a boot just on this, like a dried pine cone in the street. We've got lots of pine trees around here in New Hampshire. And when you step on one of these dried pine cones, I don't even know what I can compare it to. It's this really, really satisfying crunch. It's wonderful. I should record it and try to play it on the show. People be like, what the hell is this guy doing? He's stepping on pine cones and he's got his phone down here. What is he taking a photo of this? No, I'm recording it. I've got a podcast, and I want to play the crunch sound for people. You ever see these? That's the other thing I see when I walk my dog. There's always, like, a dog looking out a window. Like, what is that dog thinking about? Some of them don't even bark. The ones that bark, I imagine, are saying, like, F you for walking by my house. You know what I mean? And my dog Lola doesn't give a crap, you know. I think she, you know, she sees a dog behind a door or a dog in a window. And she's just like, oh, that dog can't do anything to me. And it can bark its head off all at once. And she just minds her own business and keeps walking. But yeah, these dogs. And there's one dog. There's a little dog named Henry. He's so cute. Little white dog. I think he's like a little white poodle. But yeah, that's his whole thing. All day. He sits in the window and just looks out. He almost looks like a stuffed dog. Almost like a toy, you know. And he must have like a little dog bed like right there near the window and the door. And little Henry is always just watching. Never barks. Never barks. He just sits there and watches the world go by. Till somebody takes him outside, you know, to do his business. I got a story about dogs. I went and got my taxes done and picked them up. Boy, oh boy, I got walloped this year. Oh my gosh, this is not what I expected. But yeah, I owe the federal government, ladies and gentlemen. And I will pay them. But not what I expected. I was hoping to get some cash back. It did not happen. I'd made some money that was not taxed that I now have to pay taxes on. But fear not. I'm taking care of that. I know my responsibilities as a tax-paying American, and I have a good accountant. So that's neither here nor there. I was coming back from my accountant's office, and I was on a busy two-lane road, and I saw a dog just walking out in the middle of the street without a leash, without its owner. It was about a 50-pound dog, brown dog, and a car beeped at it and slammed its brakes, and I was like, oh my god, that dog is going to get killed. And I don't know if I would have felt as responsible as I do as a dog owner now. Had I not had my own dog, but I thought to myself, oh my God, God forbid that would be my dog. I'd want somebody to pull over and immediately take care of it. And nobody was doing that. So I pulled over immediately and put my hazard lights on and jumped out of my car and ran across this busy street, again, busy two-lane road. And there was a woman watching from the opposite side of the street. And I said, is that your dog? And she said, no. And I said, oh. And I went and I banged on this house that the dog was in front of. This blue house. I banged the hell out of the door. And this woman answered the door. And I said, is this your dog? And she looked and she said, no, that's not our dog. And I said, do you have a rope or something? Because I need to, like, I'd like to attach this, you know, the dog has a collar. I can attach a rope to the collar if I can get the dog near me. I didn't know if it was a boy or a girl dog. And then I can tie it around a tree. And one of her kids, she had two little kids, and one of the kids says, we have a leash. And I was like, oh, that'd be perfect. And I said, could you get me some, like, bologna or some ham or a hot dog or something? And I said, I need to try to bring the dog to me, so, because it's a little skittish, it's a little afraid of me. And she said, okay, hang on. And she ducked back in the house. And a moment later, it must have been her husband, he came out, and he had a leash. And he said, where's the dog? And I said, oh, it's right over here. And I turned, and the dog had disappeared. And fortunately, this woman that was across the street watching this whole thing said, the dog went down there where that white car is in that driveway. And about seven houses down, there was this white car in the driveway. So this guy and I, and he had, again, he had his leash, and we went down to try to get this dog. And we get over to this house, again, about seven houses down into this driveway. And as soon as we're walking down the driveway, we see the dog has walked into the backyard, into a fenced-in area. And we see the fence has been, like, pushed open, as if the dog had, like, hit the lock and got itself out. You know what I mean? So I immediately, like, pull this fence shut. It was a metal fence, and I lock it. You know, I drop the lock on it. But you could see it would be a very easy lock for a dog to kind of hit with its nose up to and push its way out. And it was only open about a foot or 2 feet, but I closed it immediately, so the dog was in the fenced-in area. And then I went and did the same thing. I banged on this guy's door. I say guy because it was a man. He immediately came out. He smelled like a brewery. He must have been... it was a Saturday. I'm sure he was probably tipping back a few, you know, enjoying his Saturday. He didn't seem soused, you know. He didn't seem like he was inebriated, but I could smell it, you know. And I said, do you have a dog? And he said, it got out. And I said, it's okay. If it's your dog, it's in the backyard now. Can you please take a look and make sure this is your dog? So he came around back and looked and he said, yes, that's my dog. And he said, thank you guys so much. And, you know, he was all together. Even though he smelled like he'd been boozing, but that's none of my business, I suppose. But we said, yeah, no problem. But fortunately, that all worked out okay. I wanted to play some clips for you. Let's see here, but we need the clip music. So let's start with that, shall we? Clip music, please. Whenever there's trouble, without the double, we're the bloodhound gang. If you've got the crime, we've got the time, we're the bloodhound gang. Thank you. Okay, I had a couple things for you. This one was a funny one. This was a woman who was driving drunk and called the police on herself. Yes, this happened. I don't know if this is an old clip. I just happened to run across it. I'll tell you exactly who posted it. I found this on TikTok, so you can look it up, because it seemed like somebody had taken a bunch of police calls of this nature and animated them. You can tell it's a legitimate phone call, but if you look up Sock Puppet Master on TikTok, you can find this person's animated videos of, again, of police calls that have been animated. And this is a woman driving inebriated and called the cops on herself. Yeah, check it out. This is wild.
911.
Somebody's really drunk driving down Granton Road.
Which way are they going?
They are going...
Towards Granton or towards Galesville?
Towards Granton.
Okay, are you behind them or?
No, I am them.
You am them?
Yes, I am them.
Okay, so you want to call and report that you're driving drunk?
Yes.
Are you still driving right now?
Yes.
Do you want to stop driving before you get in an accident?
Yes, I will stop. Can I take my seatbelt off?
If you're stopped.
Can I turn my car off and turn the flashers off?
Yep, that's fine. If you want to turn it off and turn the flashers on, so then we can find you. 911.
Too much, right? That was pretty good. The other clip I wanted to play was the comedian Richard Lewis, who he lost this week, or this past week. He had a heart attack, and I believe he died at the age of 76. And this is a sweet clip. I love this. This is Richard Lewis talking a bit about his start in comedy and his friendship with comedian Larry David. I guess the two had been friends for about the last 50 years. They both started in comedy within a year of each other and met when they were in their mid-20s. And they had a realization when they first become acquainted in the comedy world that they had known each other when they were 13 years old and they both went to the same Jewish summer camp. This is wild. So this is Richard recounting that story, and it's pretty sweet. I love this. Check this out.
I was already a stand-up and doing pretty well. My class, for any historical value, whatever it means, was with Kaufman, Freddie Prinze Jr., and Jay Leno, and Crystal, and there were others. Elaine Boozler, who was to me like, I used to call her the Jackie Robinson of stand-up. There weren't that many young women doing it and doing well, and she was great. And others, but you know, that was like the class. And Larry came in about a year and a half later. So he was a big fan of mine. To this day, he'll always deny saying, Mr. Lewis, can I have a ride across town? He'll always deny that. To his death, till he dies, he'll deny it. He did. He said, Mr. Lewis, because he loved my work so much. And I loved his work when he finally went on. One night at the bar, let me just say this. I'm looking at him like I'm looking at you, and I'm going, God, you look scary to me. It was almost like a spooky moment, like a Roman Polanski scene, you know? And I went, I know you, man, and I don't like you. He said, stop it. And I was spooking him out. And we re-chased our tracks. And we said, well, I lived in Sheepshead Bay. I said, yeah, I was born in Brooklyn, moved to Jersey. And then I went to school in Jersey, in Englewood. And then I went to camp. He said, what camp? I went, to the sports camp, Camp All America. He went, you went to Camp All America? I went, yeah, Claire B's camp. The guy, LIU coach, went, who wrote all those kids' books, sports books. I went, wait a minute. You're that Larry David? And he said, you're that Richard. And we grabbed each other. And we almost had a fist fight. I mean, we really hated each other. A billion to one shot to become best friends, love each other's work. We really digged each other's stand-up at the time. We were young men, 24, 25. And then to realize that we really would... I was going to kill the guy when I was 13 or 12, and him too. It was unbelievable. And we became then... Really, we really bonded. I was already...
Wasn't that sweet? I really love that story. Rest in peace, Richard Lewis. Okay, I don't want to end on a downer before I hand things off to Rachel. So I'm going to play this great clip I found of Eartha Kitt, singer Eartha Kitt, actress or actor Eartha Kitt, being interviewed on British television. I believe this is from the 60s. I really enjoyed this clip. This was a gentleman who was basically retelling a compliment to Eartha Kitt that Orson Welles had given, and Eartha takes umbrage with it, but it was pretty slick. I really love this. Eartha Kitt, check it out.
Orson Welles said you were the world's most exciting woman.
What do you mean, were?
Well, when he said it, he said you were the world's most exciting woman. If he was alive today, he'd be saying you are the world's most exciting woman.
What do you think?
Who's conducting this interview? You only married once, though. Are you picky?
Once was enough.
You're picky about men.
I'm very choosy about friends. I'm very choosy about people. I love people. But I'm very choosy. I prefer to be alone rather than to be around people who are trashy.
There you go. Eartha Kitt. I like that. Very slick. At this point, I am going to hand things off to our friend, Rachel from Des Moines, and she is going to give you the chart chat. So, without any further ado, take it away, Rachel.
Thanks, Andy. Hello, and welcome back to Rachel's Chart Chat for another week. Thanks to everyone who listened last week. I got some nice comments from Sherry, Bob, Tavy, Jill, Evan, and Jeffrey. It turns out you're not allowed to record yourself reading a book for which you don't have the rights, so thanks for not cinching to the authors of I Wanna Be Sedated, nor their publisher Sound and Vision. So probably no more chapters of that unless someone wants to secure permission for me as a gift. This week, I decided to take a look at another artist's most successful U.S. singles, and we're staying in roughly the same time frame as ABBA and Kiss. We're talking about the UK art rock phenomenon known as the Electric Light Orchestra. Their music is also known as symphonic pop or orchestral pop, and some even file certain albums under progressive rock. The band was founded by Jeff Lynne, Roy Wood, and Bev Bevans out of their former group, The Move. In fact, the ELO song Do Ya had originally been recorded by The Move. ELO found success first at home in the UK and later in the US and around the world, or should we say all over the world? They appeared in both the US and UK top 40 until 1986, but had their biggest success in the mid to late 70s and early 80s. Here are the 10 songs by ELO which attained the highest positions on the US Hot 100. Electric Light Orchestra's first U.S. top 10 hit was their first single off of their fourth album, El Dorado, called Can't Get It Out of My Head. It was their sixth U.S. single release and the fourth to chart. It entered the U.S. Hot 100 on December 21st of 74 and hit a peak of number 9 on March 15th of 75, staying on the chart for 16 weeks. El Dorado is the album with Dorothy's ruby slippers on it, and per Wikipedia, it is a concept album about a Walter Mitty-like character who escapes into his daydreams. Jeff Lynne wrote Can't Get It Out of My Head after his father criticized ELO for having no tune. It was the number 81 song for the year of 75, and it didn't chart in the UK at the time, although it did hit number 52 after the song appeared on an EP in 1978. Up next is the song Evil Woman, which hit number 10. This was the first single off of their fifth album, Face the Music. It entered the charts on November 15th of 75 and hit a peak of number 10 on February 14th of 76, staying on the chart for 17 weeks. It also went top 10 in the UK, Canada, France, Ireland, and New Zealand. It was the proverbial song written at the last minute because the album didn't have a lead single. A quote on the Wikipedia page says it uses a three-chord progression taken from the end of Stairway to Heaven. The song has been used in TV shows such as EastEnders, My Name is Earl, Medium, Community, Hawaii Five-O, and the Angeline miniseries. It was number 70 for the year of 1976. Up next is the song Livin' Thing. This was the first single off of the group's sixth album, A New World Record. It entered the charts on October 23rd of 76 and hit a peak of number 13 on January 8th of 77. It stayed on the charts for 18 weeks, and it was the number 77 song overall for 1977. Wikipedia has a long quote from Jeff Lynne explaining the use of augmented chords in the song. He feels they add tension and uplift to a song when used in an otherwise run-of-the-mill chord sequence. Livin' Thing has an uncredited backup vocal by Patty Quatro, sister to Susie Quatro. Livin' Thing's pop culture uses include the movie Boogie Nights and the TV show Ray Donovan. The third single released in the U.S. for A New World Record was Telephone Line. This hit the charts on June 11th of 77 and hit a peak of number 7 on September 24th. It spent the longest time on the Hot 100 of any ELO single, which was 23 weeks. This was covered on a regular chart chat segment back in episode 289. Actually, 5 out of 10 of these I've already covered for you previously. In that segment, I talked about how they called an American phone number to get the ringing sound that they later replicated on a Moog synthesizer. And then later, they had a song called Calling America. And isn't that fun? Telephone Line was the number 15 hit for 1977. In October of 1977, ELO released their seventh album, The Double Disc Out of the Blue. The album hit number 4 and spun off 4 singles in the US, all of which made the Hot 100. Mr. Blue Sky was one of them, and it hit number 35, surprisingly low considering how well known it is nowadays. The lead single for Out of the Blue was Turn to Stone. It hit the Hot 100 on November 19th of 77 and hit a peak of number 13 on February 4th of 78, spending 18 weeks on the chart. It was the number 94 song for 1978. Turn to Stone and the 4 previous songs mentioned are all on ELO's Greatest Hits, which was an album that was released in 1979. It's known for that metal album cover, like a military or some kind of sports medal. And like ABBA's Gold, the selections of Greatest Hits Volume 1 seem to be based on the songs that had the best success in the UK, which makes sense for them being a UK band. A quote on the Wikipedia page from Billboard describes Turn to Stone as having a demonic cello. And I love the part where they're really fast speaking. I think that would be fun to watch someone do a lip sync for your life to this song. ELO followed up out of the blue with 1979's Discovery, known to Graham Friday and his friends as Disco Very. This album also put 4 singles on the US Hot 100, led by Shine a Little Love, which hit number 8 on July 21st of 1979 and spent 15 weeks on the chart. It was the number 71 hit overall for the year 1979. This has one of my favorite pop music features, the hand claps, as well as Buzz Lightyear sounds, which I also enjoy. This song feels like their audition for Xanadu. It's not one that I always think of for ELO, but I really enjoy it. Another hit from Discovery was Don't Bring Me Down, and for true 1979 flair, this one was dedicated to the space station Skylab. And that's real, that's not a joke from last week's book. The song hit the Hot 100 on August 4th of 79 and hit a peak of number 4 on September 8th. In all, it spent 15 weeks on the chart, and it was the number 81 hit for 1979. This song is known for the debate over what Jeff Lynne is singing in the chorus after he says, "Don't Bring Me Down." Is it Bruce? Is it Bruce? As with many pieces of rock lore, Wikipedia has contradictory explanations from two people who were there. So I say look that up and decide for yourself who is right. As mentioned, the greatest hits stopped at 1978, so I almost didn't buy it because for the lack of Don't Bring Me Down, but in hindsight, I'm glad that didn't stop me. I really loved Don't Bring Me Down when I was in junior high and getting big into the 70s. After Discovery, the group's next release was the soundtrack to the 1980 film Xanadu. The album is credited to Olivia Newton-John and Electric Light Orchestra, and their songs are kind of split from side one and side two. The third single to chart from that soundtrack was All Over the World. It entered the Hot 100 on August 2nd of 1980 and hit a peak of number 13 on October 4th. It spent 16 weeks on the chart. This song plays in a sequence where Olivia and Michael Beck take Gene Kelly to get some new duds. So you get a fashion montage, dancing, roller skating, and a human-sized pinball board. It's a lot of fun. And it did indeed chart all over the world, and it did the best in the Netherlands where it hit number 10. Up next is the title track, Xanadu. It's credited to Olivia Newton-John and ELO, and is the only song on the album with such credit. Essentially, it has Olivia as the lead singer in place of Jeff Lynne. In addition, James Newton Howard is credited with synthesizers on the track. He would go on to a successful career in film scores. Xanadu was ELO's only number one hit in the UK. In the US, it hit number 8 after debuting on August 9th of 80, which is 1 week after All Over the World, and it peaked on October 11th, also 1 week after its predecessor hit its peak. Xanadu was the number 93 hit for 1980. Juliana Hatfield included it on her 2018 Olivia Newton-John covers album, and Tom Sharpling played it often on The Best Show. I learned today that Juliana also did an ELO cover album in 2023, and I'm very excited to listen to that. The 10th of ELO's top 10 US singles is Hold On Tight from their 9th album Time, released in 1981. It debuted on July 25th of 81 and hit a peak of number 10 on October 3rd. It spent 19 weeks on the chart and it was the number 81 hit for 1981. It was their final US or UK top 10, and it was one of 4 singles that went top 10 in at least 10 countries, territories around the world, along with Livin' Thing, Don't Bring Me Down, and Xanadu. Time was another concept album, which dealt with a time traveler to the year 2095. Wikipedia states the album emphasized electronics over their former orchestral sound. So that's a look into the 10 best performing ELO singles on the US charts. Based on what I could find on 45cat, they had 33 commercial singles released here, 26 of them made the Hot 100, 20 in the top 40, and 7 in the top 10. Before I go, I want to mention I've been listening to and enjoying the audiobook for Kevin Mulrine's Yes, The Tormato Story. He was a guest of the show on episode 283. If you have a Spotify subscription, audiobooks are now included, and that's one of them. Thanks so much for listening. Back to you, Andy.
Thank you, Rachel. Amazing work. A lot of great stuff there. A few years back, a friend of mine gave me a bunch of CDs of his, and one of them was ELO's Greatest Hits, and I don't know if I've ever played it. I should really be driving around with that. That's some great music. This has been episode 322 of the People Are the Enemy podcast. Our theme song is Walrus Love by Nokia Ocean. You can find that song and more at pizzapuppies.bandcamp.com. My name is Andy Mascola. You can purchase my novels via Amazon and other online book retailers in both paperback and ebook formats for as little as $1.99. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you, Rachel from Des Moines. We love you. Peace.